This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. In the news this episode, what the coronavirus means for air travelers, for the airlines, and for other aviation-related activity. A test flight program to make the flying experience possible for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The only U.S. state without commercial service changes that this year. The Collings Foundation institutes a ground tour policy for the time being. Former CEO Dennis Muilenburg's departure package is announced. A Boeing announcement on the NMA. And the crash that killed Kobe Bryant and 8 others. Also, we have This Week in Aviation History, an ADS-B update on Launchpad Merzari's Focke-Wulf, and engine shutdowns and spilled coffee. It's all coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 589 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and joining me is David Vanderhoof, our aviation historian. Hi, David.
Hello, everyone. How are you today? Looking forward to a small, tight, cohesive show where we're going to be talking about bugs or viruses.
Yes, that turns out to be a bigger story than I originally thought. But to help us, this episode is our main man, Micah. Hi, Micah.
Oh, no, I'm okay.
No joking about the virus.
Hey, everybody. It's so great to be here, and I couldn't help myself. Nice to visit with you guys. Nice to talk to everybody.
Well, Max Trescott is off. I'm not sure what. Yeah, flying probably, most likely. When he's either here or he's flying. Those seem to be the two things that consume his entire life. So the other Max is off tonight. It's just the three of us. A couple of announcements to kick things off. First off, a conference, an aviation conference. Now, we have a media partnership with Aviation Festival Americas 2020. This is something that David and I do over at the UAV Digest quite a lot. Haven't really done much of that here on Airplane Geeks. So we have this time, what is a media partner? What that means is we help promote the event and they help promote us. So it's sort of a symbiotic relationship there. So Aviation Festival Americas 2020 is in May 12th through 13th in Miami, Florida. And the keynote speakers and panelists represent kind of an interesting mix of folks. They're going to have the vice president of JetLink International, the executive VP and chief commercial officer of United Airlines. Scott McCartney is going to be there. You've probably been familiar with that name. He's a reporter, author, creator of The Middle Seat. He writes for The Wall Street Journal. Also, there will be a senior vice president of network strategy for American Airlines, president and CEO of Frontier Airlines. I'd have some questions for him. And senior aviation business editor from Skift. So we'll be talking more about this, but just wanted to mention it right now. If you're interested, there is a banner on the website at airplanegeeks.com over on the right-hand side. That's a link you can click to get to more information. And wanted to mention also that I understand that if you book by February 14th, you can save 30%. So if you take a look at this and decide this is something you might be interested in, you can save 30%. Next sort of housekeeping item, each year, usually at the beginning of the year, we acknowledge the PayPal donors for the prior year. And I didn't do that this time until now. So the donors that we'd like to thank for their contributions in 2019, and actually I think this list also is up through January of this year, but Stephen A., Douglas W., Srinand, Roger P., John C., Fraser I., Martin R., Gregory H., Mark H., Hendrick N., Patrick W., Danny L., Mark L., Michael S., and Nathan R. We want to thank them for helping to contribute to the success of Airplane Geeks podcast. Now, I want to mention that the funds that our donors provide are used for fees like media hosting and web hosting, domain registration renewals, things like that. Also for some software from time to time, things like WordPress plugins that we use. Also for promotional material, things like T-shirts and magnets and the pinback buttons that we get. We just reordered the promotional material for this year. And I'll mention for those of you who are disappointed last year because I didn't get any 2X T-shirts, we've rectified that.
Yay!
Yeah, I know. Yeah, having to have Micah squeeze into an extra large was
it's scary looking.
It's scary. So like we got some bigger shirts. So we've just started the year off with a big order. If you'd like to help us fund that, you can find a donate button on the website at airplanegeeks.com. It's a PayPal donate button. All right. So I want to thank all of those who have contributed in the past year and in previous years. Some are one-time donations. That's fine. Some are recurring donations where folks sign up to donate a given amount each month. If you do choose that option, you can turn it off at any time very easily. So we want to thank all those who contributed.
And please know that while we don't generally continue to ask for donations on the podcast, we don't talk about it every week. They are greatly appreciated, and we really do thank you for it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with that out of the way, I think it's time for us to start with some of the aviation news from the past week. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Ready.
All right, our first item comes from New Center, Maine. Micah, when I saw this, I thought this is just a wonderful, wonderful thing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what we're looking at here?
This is no doubt the positive airline story of the week, maybe the month. But up in Bangor, Maine, Allegiant Airlines set up a program with the Bangor Airport for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, people that might be afraid to fly or might have issues with flying, oftentimes children, maybe on the spectrum or whatever. And they set up a program with Allegiant where they ran an air travel program so to bring people with those kinds of cognitive or autism spectrum disabilities to get on the airplane, to see what it's like, to explore the entire aircraft, to flush the toilets and hear what that's like, to go into the cockpit and meet everyone and to know what it's all about. And parents and kids and all the people that went were just so delighted with it. One of the parents said, "If we wouldn't have done this, I would never have tried to get on a plane, but now I would try doing it." People that have had to drive all the time because their kids were just afraid to get on an aircraft. And it's just, we've talked about programs like this before going into effect, but it's the first one that I heard about. And when I saw it happen, I said, we've got to talk about it on the show.
This Wings for All program is really impressive. When you stop and think about it, for someone, oftentimes, like you say, Mike, a child who's got autism or some other developmental disability, you think about all the things that go on at the airport and the crowds, the lights, the lines, the different sounds and noises, the security process, and that's all before you even get into the airplane. And so that can be fairly frightening for certain individuals. So, yeah, this is kind of it's like a dry run where all the way to include getting on, in this case, getting on the airplane, of course, not taking off, but and they have the opportunity to press the call buttons, and it's just a whole the lavatories, just a whole process. So
they went through the TSA screening. TSA yeah. Worked with them, and they went passing right through TSA security, which that intimidates me, you know, yeah. And to learn how to do that, and for so many of them, it was the first time even at an airport, let alone the first steps onto an aircraft.
So there's an organization. It's called The Arc. It's at TheArc, A-R-C, .org. And they're dedicated to making, I guess, life easier for people with these kinds of disabilities. And they have local chapters. And the Wings for Autism program, of which this is kind of like a part related to, it was created by Charles Rivers Center, which is an affiliated chapter of the ARC. And they did that in collaboration with the Massachusetts Port Authority. And they are really interested in bringing about these Wings programs to other airports, to additional airports. And if you'd like to pursue that for your airport, there's an email address I'll give you. It's wingsforautism@thearc.org. And again, the ARC is TheArc.org. We could just leave out all the rest of the stuff this week, practically, and this would be good enough, at least in my opinion. What do you think, David? I just love it when people do things like this, things that they almost seem obvious in hindsight.
Yeah, well, when something seems obvious in hindsight, it isn't evidently obvious to begin with. But yes, there's a big call out there for like in my universe now, museums as well as other. To cater towards people who are on the spectrum, to make them more friendly, to provide earphones, or to look out for all sorts of people, not just your business flyers. People on the spectrum may be flying for the first time, so it's really good. And the fact that it was the whole experience, going all the way through the TSA checkpoint, and hopefully they didn't have to take off their shoes or their belts or get frisked, but that experience, and the sensory overload that's involved with just that would be important enough to, but then on airplanes and important aspects, like anyone who's been on in an airport airplane lavatory knows that it's a loud flush, and to someone on the spectrum, that kind of sound is very, very disruptive to them personally. So to get them accustomed to that is very important. And other things you don't think about is like restraints. What do you do? The first thing you do when you sit down in an airplane, you put on your seatbelt. Well, to someone who's on the spectrum, that could be a restraint. They're not used to being held down, even though we don't think anything of a seatbelt. For someone on the spectrum, that's a big deal. Because some of them have the effect of knowing that kind of seatbelt means they did something wrong. And you have to illustrate to them that, no, this is what everybody does, and it's a good thing. So this is the kind of program that probably should be spread out through all the major airports throughout the United States and globally, just so people get better at it.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate enough to actually experience something like this. My father used to run a summer camp for disabled children back when I was, and I would work for him. And he was able to work something out with Eastern Airlines. And we took a group of about 30 special ed kids, is what it was at the time, down to Newark Airport. And we were able to get right through Newark Airport. This is obviously before 9/11. Walked down to an Eastern Airlines L-1011 and brought all 30 or 40 of them on board the aircraft, had a talk from the captain and talk from the flight attendants and get to experience the whole thing. And it was including how to find food at the airport, what it costs, how to find gates, all those other things, and teaching these mostly intellectually disabled, but all sorts of other disabilities. And you should have seen the faces light up. I was probably 18 years old at the time, so it's a while ago, but it was just it was a wonderful experience to watch.
That's great. What a great story this is. And we'll have a link in the show notes to the ARC and where you can learn more. All right. Next item comes actually from Max Trescott. There's only one U.S. state with no commercial airline service. That's about to change.
And before we go to it, and I don't know how many of you read the article, Max said he was able to guess what it was before he read it. Were any of you?
Well, I saw the link, and the, if you see the link lets you know. So I couldn't guess because I already knew what the answer was.
Well, I missed the link. I just saw the story. I didn't see the link, and I thought about it, and I got it.
You did?
I definitely got it, yeah.
Well, it's the second smallest U.S. state. That's the first clue.
And the first state in the union.
The first state in the union. It's got a population of just under 1 million and a total area of just under 2,000 square miles. It's the only state with no regular commercial airline service. All right, you folks listening, have a guess? It's Delaware. Delaware has no commercial airline service. So if you live in Delaware, you've got to go to Philadelphia or even Newark or to Washington, D.C. or some other airport. Well, now Frontier Airlines is returning to Wilmington Newcastle Airport. That's ILG, starting May 14th, 2020. They left Delaware, Frontier Airlines did, in 2015. But now they're going to start up nonstop flights to Orlando, which is exciting because now Delaware can say they actually have some commercial service.
Yeah, it's it sort of surprises me. I've been through Newcastle, and it's not that far from Wilmington, and Wilmington is not that far from Philly, and with a huge airport just up the road, it sort of surprises me. But if Frontier's doing it, there's no doubt there's money to be made.
You know, I drive past this airport, like right past it. When I go down to visit my mother in Maryland. So, and I'd always thought about stopping there just to see what's going on. It's a good-sized airport. They have three runways. They have two runways that are about 7,000 feet long. They have a 4,600-foot runway and a helipad. And there's a good-sized GA population there. It says on their website that they have approximately 68 business jets that locate there and 220 propeller aircraft are based there. Flight Safety International is there. Three FBOs, Atlantic ILG, Dassault Falcon Jet, and also Fly Advanced. And they kick this off with a one-way introductory fare to Orlando of $29, which, that's pretty exciting. I mean, I drive down to Delaware just to get to Orlando for $29
more. Yeah, buyer beware. It's probably another $50 to be able to pay for it with your credit card, you know?
Well, there's all that. But also, in looking into it a little more, I see that introductory one-way fare of $29 was good if you purchased your tickets by January 31st of this year. And of course, it's after that now.
Yeah, they announced this whole program on February 1st. So it worked out just fine for Frontier.
Yeah, no, actually, close. The Frontier press release describing this was dated January 28th. So the $29 fare was good for a couple of days only. But still, anyway, it's great that Delaware is joining the rest of the United States.
Now, Frontier does some great promotions. They fly into PWM now, but for a while they had a promotion. They were trying to show how they're going greener and greener and greener. And one of the things they did for a few days is if your last name was Green, you could get a free flight.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
They're amazing with their promotions.
Next item. This actually comes from the Hartford CBS affiliate, WFSB. Micah found this. This is my television station, basically the one that I watch most of the time. Now, after the B-17 crash, the fatal crash at Bradley Airport last year, one of the things that we talked about and wondered was what would the impact be on the Collings Foundation? And maybe even some others that also offer these kinds of old warbird flights. And Micah, we see from this article that there's going to be a little bit of change in the wind here.
Yeah, it was announced by the director of marketing from the Collings Foundation, Hunter Cheney, that they're going to just keep the large aircraft, the bombers, the B-25 and the B-24 on for static display, that they're no longer going to be offering flights on those aircraft. But the good news is that the P-51 and the P-40 are still going to provide flights, but because they can do that way, because they call it flight instruction, which is different than just a courtesy ride or a courtesy flight based on a donation. So I think it's a good way to start. And I'm guessing, Max, that this is basically while the investigation is underway, and hopefully after the investigation is complete, based on what they find out, then they can reevaluate and determine what they're going to do in the long term. Because I certainly hope that people will still be able to fly on board some of the bigger aircraft at the Collings Foundation and the other organizations have as well.
Sure, absolutely. They call these LHFE flights, Living History Flight Exemption, or they're flown under the LHFE designation, Living History Flight Exemption. And the Collings Foundation has said that this decision is part of it's a temporary stand down while they're working with the FAA. So I don't know what those conversations with the FAA and the Collings Foundation involve and what kinds of changes we might see in the future. But I think you're right, Micah. This does seem like it's a temporary measure, and it's probably an appropriate one. It may or may not be necessary from a safety standpoint. I don't know. We don't know. We haven't seen a good investigation from the B-17 crash to let us know if there is a widespread safety issue or anything of that sort. But I think in terms of what steps do you take now until that investigation is completed, I think that's probably appropriate.
And the investigation will be conducted very thoroughly by the NTSB, and all of that is very, very public. So we'll have all the information about that, and then we'll see how the FAA reacts to it.
Yeah. All right. Next up, some stories about the coronavirus. Now, this is moving pretty quickly in terms of numbers of people infected, who's infected, where they are, folks who are dying from the coronavirus, and all of that. So we want to just look at it from an aviation standpoint, primarily at this point. And we see some travel restrictions that are taking place now. There are implications for air travelers. This all has effect on the airlines themselves, as well as some other aviation-related impacts. So we're going to spend a few minutes talking about some of those things. But let's start with some of the travel restrictions, the United States travel restrictions that have gone into effect. And as I said, this is kind of breaking news category, so things may be different by the time you're listening to this. But as it is right now, entry will be denied to foreign nationals who visited China in the 14 days prior to their arrival to the United States. As for U.S. citizens who have been in China's Hubei province in the 2 weeks prior to their return to the U.S., they face a mandatory quarantine of up to 14 days. Also, U.S. citizens returning to the U.S. from the rest of mainland China in the prior 14 days will receive health screenings at selected ports of entry and face up to 14 days of self-monitored quarantine. And then travelers from China who show no symptoms will be asked to quarantine themselves for up to 14 days in their homes.
Okay, this is just, it's scary. It's the law of unintended consequences. The biggest spreader of this virus happens to be air travel. It's ironic that the thing we talk about every week has such a negative effect and can make things hop the Pacific Ocean very quickly. Now, mind you that this disease spreads very quickly. And even here in the States, they've got their first person-to-person transfer But it is kind of amazing that what's feeding the spread is air travel. It's naturally part of what's going on in the globe. You know, we've gotten the globe keeps shrinking and shrinking, and air travel's the main reason why it's doing that.
And do you think, you guys, it's any different than any other virus that we've seen? We've seen measles come into the U.S. again, and a lot of that came from people coming from through air travel from other parts of the world. And we've seen mumps and chickenpox come back. And I don't want to get into a vaccination issue discussion here, but just the fact that it's back, and it usually comes from places where there haven't been vaccinations. This is a new virus that we don't have any vaccines for. But I think that it just shows how small the world really is. If you think about the 1918 flu epidemic, it came over here from Europe after World War I and spread throughout the country. So I don't know that this is necessarily different. I think that we have heard more about it because we have better media coverage.
Well, and it's also reminiscent of the SARS epidemic back in 2003, if you can remember back that far. The Washington Post says that during the SARS crisis, Asia-Pacific air carriers lost $6 billion in revenue in 8% of their traffic. That's according to the IATA. And it is just kind of it's a seasonal thing. These kinds of viruses are winter diseases. And so by the time late spring comes around, it will be gone. But the implications are significant. Business Insider says that at least 50 airlines have canceled flights to China amid the coronavirus fears. And they have a list of them that we'll put in the show notes. But as for U.S. airlines, United, American, and Delta are suspending all flights to mainland China. United is doing that February 6th. And then until March 28, although Delta's cancellations have already started February 1st, sfgate.com offers some suggestions for travelers. They say take a face mask. Many people are wearing them. They say that you may be scanned for a fever and taken aside if you have one. Travelers should be expected to have to answer lots of questions. They also advise, and this is the sort of common sense for this sort of thing, wash your hands frequently, use antibacterial wipes on everything around your seat area. And this particular article also notes that when it comes to canceling flights or canceling vacation trips because of this, they say virus outbreaks are not covered by most travel insurance policies.
The virus outbreak isn't covered, but if the airline cancels the flight or cancels a service, then it's covered.
But if you decide you don't want to go on the cruise because you don't want to be with, 3,000 other people,
That is unless you bought the cancel for any reason policy, which is also available.
And the other thing, Max, you mentioned the SARS epidemic. One of the things that I read, and I forget where exactly I read it, but the number of flights here from the United States to China in that time frame has doubled, nearly doubled and tripled due to growth, etc. So we didn't have as many airlines flying to China when the SARS epidemic, but now we've got more of them flying more frequent flights to China and various aspects. So it's a growth mechanism.
Now, when I see on television the coverage of this and you see scenes in an airport or other area, even in the city where a lot of people are wearing these masks, I've kind of noticed that there's a wide variety of different types of masks. I mean, some are just cover your mouth and nose, but they don't seal that, that area. And I see other people wearing things that look a lot more form-fitting and seem like they might be more effective. But there's an interesting article on Boarding Group One, Flying and Coronavirus, Should I Cancel My Flight? And they talk about the idea that a lot of people think that, you know, if you're flying on an airplane and there's someone sick on the airplane, everybody in the airplane is going to get sick because you're all in this enclosed tube. And what the writer here says is that's not the case. They say that commercial airplanes have advanced air filtration systems, that the air on planes is usually a mixture of 50% outside air and 50% filtered, although obviously recirculated air, and that breathing air on a plane while you're flying is not likely to spread coronaviruses. It's the contact that's more likely, touching something, coming in close contact with affected individuals. So they, again, recommend washing your hands, avoid touching your face, try not to come in contact with someone who's coughing. But they say there's no evidence to suggest a standard surgical mask will prevent infection. So that's where they're coming from anyway.
The discussion on NPR, and that's National Public Radio here in the U.S., talked about how the face masks don't really do anything because they're not big enough to, or rather the filtration is too large to keep a virus from going through it, that air and moisture can leak out around the sides, and that they get wet just from breathing. And so it really is useless. They're only good for a few hours. They also talked about how hand sanitizer really doesn't do anything, that you should be washing your hands with soap and water, but the hand sanitizer isn't really going to help. But again, if you look at this, there have been, it's certainly something to be concerned about, but not to get all panicked about at this point. There haven't been that many deaths from it. The percentage of death and the percentage even of contamination is far less than that of other diseases that we've been dealing with for years and years and years. And we're working on it to keep it from spreading. So we'll see how it goes.
And despite all that, I think the impact here on aviation, on the industry, is likely to be pretty significant, and on tourism as well. We see some examples of that. There's a Yahoo.com article that talks about some exhibitors are dropping out of the Singapore air show because they're worried about the coronavirus. Textron has said that they no longer plan to attend. General Dynamics Gulfstream division is not going to attend. Now, the organizers have said that there will be doctors and medics on standby in case any visitors are feeling unwell and need some attention. There are some of the big corporations that are planning to attend. Airbus, Boeing, Lockheed Martin all still plan to attend the show. So I think that, you know, that's a business show primarily, and you see some effects there. We see airlines canceling flights, and so there's the impact there. And then, you know, I think you've got this factor of just the general public being nervous about going to airports where there are lots of people, getting on an airplane where there are lots of people. And so I think we're going to see, you know, a dip here in business for the aviation industry, for commercial aviation, certainly.
A big story on Marketplace tonight and in a couple of other places has shown that oil prices have gone down considerably. And they expect oil that might go hit as low as $40 a barrel, which also in terms of aviation means this is a perfect time to be hedging, which is what saved Southwest during the last downturn.
Yeah, they talk about the crack or the crack spread. Which is, it's the...
You know, I don't talk dirty like that to you.
I knew that. I knew David was... I don't know why they call it that, but it'd be interesting to know the history of that term. But as applied here, what it means is it's the difference, basically. It's the difference in price between the oil that a refinery receives and the price they get for the
refined product.
For the refined product, exactly. And
the reason they call it that is because to refine the product, it's called cracking oil.
Oh. Oh, so the crack spread, that makes sense. Okay. Thanks for that, Mike. but that's taken, a real dip. What did I see? 30% or something like that. And And the spread for aviation fuel is like down 17% or something like that. Don't quote me. But yeah, big reduction. So this kind of a thing, this kind of a, you know, an epidemic like this, it sort of percolates throughout the industry and the economy, and the effects are significant.
Yeah, we'll be seeing this for some time to come. My cousin, who I've spoken to before, he goes to Thailand a couple of times a year, and has been calling me regularly because his plane stops in Peking. Should I be going? I don't know yet. You're not going till April. Relax. Let's find out.
Yes. Yeah. The season might be over by then, but we've seen a lot of people perish from this. And, you know, hopefully this won't expand too greatly. All right. A little item. This is from the Washington Post. My mother sent me this clipping. Do you guys have mothers that see newspaper articles, or parents that see newspaper articles and say, oh, you know, my ad geek son would love this? So she sent me one from the Washington Post. Now, we've wondered about former CEO Dennis Muhlenberg's departure package. The Washington Post has some data. So Muhlenberg forfeits $14.6 million worth of a severance package, but he is contractually required to receive equity and pension benefits, and those are valued at about $62.2 million.
Poor guy. Oh, I feel so bad for him. He lost $14 million. He's only going to get 62. Oh, that's just terrible.
Terrible, isn't it?
Oh, gosh.
Now, he gets to keep his stock options, so he's got another $18.5 million worth of stock options.
Today, they could be $16 million tomorrow.
Well, that's true. That's true. And this information comes because of an SEC filing that Boeing was required to make. So that's what Dennis Muhlenberg gets to walk away with. The Washington Post article also points out that almost ironically, this was announced the same day that Spirit AeroSystems employees received layoff notices, 2,800 of them. So I'm sure they're not particularly happy about that. Also notes that about half of Spirit's annual revenue comes from the 737 MAX. So the suppliers are getting hit, you know, with the whole 737 MAX thing. You know, I think the attention is focused on Boeing, at least initially. But now we're seeing more and more of the impact is that trickles down through the supply chain.
Yeah, it's just it's going to get worse and worse. But the good news is the new CEO, David Calhoun, well, fortunately, he's got a $28 million compensation package, which includes a $7 million long-term incentive. So, you know, he's really incentivized to make it happen.
Yeah, I would love to know the terms of the incentive award. I mean, this was frequently done. You know, if you want to elicit a certain behavior or elicit a certain result, objective for your executive team, it's fairly common to use these kinds of incentive awards. So that it, I mean, I don't know, but it could be something like get the 737 MAX back in the air by June, or I mean something. You tend to,
it's probably more like get the FAA off our back. So,
well, yeah, that may not be possible anymore, but or going forward as a result of this. But I'm sure that Calhoun's incentive award includes some kind of tie-in with getting the 737 MAX back in the air.
Or it could be get the KC-46 to be working the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, that's true.
Boeing's got some issues.
Boeing has lots of issues. Now, I noticed that in John Ostrower's publication, The Air Current, he's got a piece that he's published, Boeing Collapses NMA and FSA into Single Search for Its Next Airplane. And this ties in with something that we've been saying here. The NMA, of course, is the new mid-market airplane, which sometimes is called the 757 replacement. It's something bigger than a 737, smaller than 787, probably something in the 220 to 270 seat range.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
It's bigger. It's bigger than a 737 MAX. And so David Calhoun has said that now we're going to start with a clean sheet of paper. So that's the NMA. The FSA is
the future small aircraft, I believe.
That's it. I couldn't think of it. I knew it, but a senior moment, which you could characterize as the 737 replacement, because Boeing ultimately needs to and wants to redesign that airplane. They were hoping, I think, to not have to develop the 737 MAX and wait until the new 737, the FSA. But because of competitive pressures with Airbus and the A320neo, they had to do the 737 MAX. And so one idea that I've been promoting for months is that the 737 MAX is taking so much internal effort and resources and taking so much when I say resources, first off, manpower resources, engineering resources, but it's also taking a ton of financial resources. Meanwhile, Boeing was supposed to have been announcing the NMA and proceeding with that, but I've been saying I don't think they can afford to do that right now. Well, Calhoun and Boeing is basically saying, we want to reassess and see what makes sense now. And the market might have shifted so that maybe you'd make different decisions now than you would have five or more years ago in terms of the NMA. But I think there's also this other issue with Boeing just not being able to devote the resources to it. And the A321neo is kind of eating Boeing's lunch in sort of this segment. But Boeing may just have to skip the NMA and just go right to the FSA in the future.
Between the Airbus A321neo and the A321 XLR, which is only just coming out, yes, the extended long range, and the A220, the old Bombardier C series, Airbus has things wrapped up pretty well. I think Boeing, what they need to do with this NMA, FSA, whatever they end up calling it, is to be able to go beyond this and look into something completely different so that they can be marketing something that's new and different as opposed to competing with something that's already out there and very, very successful. You don't want this different version of the same thing. That's the hard part, is coming up with that great idea.
Yes, yes. If you're really super into this stuff, the Air Current is a subscription service. But if you're serious about it, or if your company is serious about aviation, primarily commercial aviation, it's worth looking at. It's at theaircurrent.com. We've had John on the show, I guess it was over
several
a year ago.
Times. Yeah. Yeah. But he's a great writer. He does wonderful work. And while I'm not a subscriber to the Air Current, I do see some of it here and there. And he's definitely worth following and definitely worth subscribing to be able to get his point of view.
Yeah. And I think at the beginning of this year, there's a discount offer on new subscriptions, I think. I'm not sure if it's still active.
I think that's over.
Is that over?
I think that's over now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still. And it's worth it. I subscribe to it. You know, it's not... if you're a college kid, you're not going to be able to afford it, but it's worth it if you're serious. Just a mention of the helicopter crash that killed Kobe Bryant and eight others. I know some of our listeners have been asking us to comment on it, and there's not too much. I mean, there's a CNN piece, NTSB details the final moments of the helicopter before it crashed, killing Kobe Bryant and eight others, but there's not a whole lot of detail. They do talk about the final transmission of the pilot, who told air traffic control he was climbing to avoid a cloud layer, but didn't hear from him after that. And we really just don't know very much at this point in time. I mean, as David said, I think last week, it sort of feels like controlled flight into terrain. seems weather related, but there you can think of other scenarios that could have played out here. So it's really kind of hard to say too much at this point.
It's very, well, I was going to say up in the air, and that's the wrong term. But we don't have enough information. And as regular listeners know to the Airplane Geeks, we don't speculate. We will offer opinion based on what we have, but there's not even enough to offer an opinion on at this point.
Yeah, there really isn't. But, you know, tragic, obviously, any aviation accident that results in fatalities is tragic. But hopefully we'll have some more information. I guess there's the debris field is pretty extensive. It seems like a high speed crash into the side of the mountain there, making it somewhat difficult for the investigators. But the NTSB is pretty good. Those folks are pretty good there. And if there's some conclusions that can be drawn, they'll find them.
I have no doubt.
One thing that our friend Isaac Alexander does in our Slack listener team is he does a little encapsulation of this week in aviation history via Speed News. Micah, it's always fun to see what happened in aviation history.
Yeah, and you know, I put this in the show notes both because it's a really big week of things that you wouldn't really think of happened all in the same week in different years, but also to thank Isaac for doing it every year and every week rather, and also as a push to have people join our Slack listener team, because there is so much information that comes through that from our listeners. And it's so much fun for me personally to go through it and see what our listeners have to say. And this is one of the things you can find. And this week in aviation, all these things happened this week in aviation, starting back in 1963 with the first flight of the Boeing 727, a truly iconic aircraft that unfortunately isn't particularly in service anymore. And then in 1969, just 6 years later, Boeing was ready to dump the whole company and invested so much in this aircraft that if it didn't succeed, Boeing would, well, we wouldn't have Boeing today. And we almost don't, but in 1969, this week, first flight of the Boeing 747.
The next one, we jump up to 1986, the first flight of the Beechcraft Starship. I always loved that airplane, at least how it looks.
It's a beautiful airplane and often confused with the
Piaggio 108.
Thank you very much, David. They look very, very look very, very similar. Sound completely different. Both beautiful aircraft, but there aren't very many Beechcraft Starships around anymore. I think I got to see one flying just once. Let's jump to 1997 because it's another big Boeing thing.
It is.
Can't believe it. The same week, in 3 different years, Boeing did something. And in 1997, it was the first flight of the Boeing 737 NG, the next generation.
In 2000, JetBlue launched operations out of JFK 20 years ago.
Can't believe they've been around that long. And then 18 years ago, in 2002, it was the first flight of the Airbus A340-500, another aircraft you don't see very often any longer. And I think the most beautiful of all the Airbus aircraft. I just love the lines on that airplane.
Yeah, that does look pretty good. I don't know. And the four engines, it just, I don't know. It looks like a real airplane, you know?
It really does. And I know that Captain Nick, who was with the airline pilot guy, he used to fly them and he loved flying it. He really loved the A340. He flew the A330s as well, but he loved the A340 when he was flying.
Yeah, four CFM56 engines.
Wow. And then, so I can't believe it's been 7 years since this last thing happened. I can't believe that it ever really happened. But in 2013, U.S. Airways disappeared and became part of American Airlines when they merged together.
Yep. 7 years ago.
It's hard to believe that we covered that in real time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
And then the last one in Isaac's list is from 2018. This week in 2018, as first flight of the LEAP-powered A321LR, the long-range version.
And who is LEAP, Max? You know engines better than anybody. LEAP is what corporation?
LEAP is the CFMI, you know, the GE French partnership. All right. What's up with the geeks? We have a what's up from Launchpad Merzari, our reporter at large. As you know, if you've been listening, he's now the proud owner of this Focke-Wulf. And, of course, we have the ADS-B mandate. And we have an update from Launchpad, just a few minutes, that describes his update on the Focke-Wulf.
Hello, airplane listeners. This is your reporter at large, Launchpad Merzari. As you know, for the last year, during most of my interviews, I ask about ADS-B for different guests that we've had on the show. Well, you wonder what I'm doing for ADS-B. Well, this last weekend, I went and installed ADS-B on the Focke-Wulf. The unit I chose was the U-Avionics tail beacon. Pretty easy installation. Took me only 30 minutes to install it. This device replaces the rear-facing tail light on the aircraft. It's pretty amazing. This device, the size of a standard household light bulb, has a GPS receiver in it. Not just any GPS. It has a GPS WAS, Wide Area Augmentation Signal, receiver in it. It also has a receiver because it's listening to your transponder on, I believe it's 1075. Then it has two transmitters on the two ADS-B out frequencies. In addition to that, it has an LED light in it because it still has to function as a rear anti-collision tail light. This device also has a web browser in it because that's how you configure it. You log into it with your iPhone and an app and configure it for your aircraft, giving it your tail number, the length of your aircraft, and there's some other details that go into it. So let's recap. In a device the size of the light bulb that I paid $1,600 from Gulf Coast Avionics and a half an hour of my time to remove the tail light bracket and the tail light and install this device in the back of my airplane, I have a device that listens on two separate frequencies, then has the software in it to take the data coming off those two frequencies, combine that data plus its internal data, and then transmit it on two different frequencies. It still has a web page in it and a web browser, so I can configure it, an amazingly bright rear-facing light bulb in it because it still has to produce rear-facing light. And it's the size of a light bulb, of a standard household light bulb. Technology is just amazing. This was my solution to get ADS-B compliant. Just thought you'd want an update. This is your reporter at large, Launchpad Merzari, frequency change approved. Good day.
Isn't that the coolest solution?
It really is. Part of my what's up with the geeks is the fact that Launchpad called me on Friday night and we talked about this. The other thing that's amazing about it was incredibly inexpensive. I can't remember what he paid for it, but it just did not cost anywhere near what you would think an ADS-B device would cost. And it took him 30 minutes to install it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's pretty cool. So I may have a chance later this year to go flying with Launchpad in his Focke-Wulf. We're going to try to see if we can arrange that. Maybe after Oshkosh, because we'll be up in Wisconsin. I've got to drive down to Dallas after that. Of course, Dallas is in Texas, and so is Launchpad. So I might stop by and see him in his airplane.
Yeah, but then again, Oshkosh is in Wisconsin, and so will be Launchpad. So
yeah, I don't think I'll have an opportunity to go flying with him during Oshkosh week, though. I don't think he's going to be going up during the week, but still, pretty exciting stuff. So, Micah, what else is new with you?
Well, part of what happened with that Launchpad and I had our own podcast, as I mentioned in my New Year's story. Every so often he calls. Friday night, about 10:30, 10:45, he called, and we did an hour and 14-minute podcast between each other because the next thing I knew, I looked at the clock, and it was midnight, and I said, Launchpad, I got to go to bed. What's going on here?
Oh, man.
But it was great to talk to him, and I learned all about that that device and other things that are going on with his airplane, which is just amazing. I hope to see it one day. But the other good news is that I still haven't had surgery, and it looks like I'm not going to need surgery. Well, I'll know more in March, but I've been – I don't know if you can believe it, but I've joined a gym. And I actually go at least once a week, and I'm still doing physical therapy, and it's working just great. And part of that that happened is, believe it or not, it's aviation related. Remember when Max Trescott was talking about having a pulse oximeter with him in the airplane?
Yes, yes.
And he said, you know, they're around $100 or whatever, and, you know, it's a good thing to keep around. And I started looking them up, and I found that, no, they're $10. And you can get a pulse oximeter that works on a couple of AAA batteries. It's the same size as the kind that you know, get it, use at the doctor's office for $10 from Amazon or wherever else. And I take it with me because I need to check my pulse while I'm on the bike or the treadmill, and tested it against the one they have at my physical therapist uses, the professional one, and it works just as well for $10. So
beat that.
Yeah, if you're a pilot and you're concerned about, you know, checking your oxygen levels while you're flying and concerned about altitude, $10 pulse oximeter. Buy a couple of them, throw them in your go bag. It's amazing, just amazing. Cool.
Now, I believe you have a shout out, Micah.
I do have a shout out. You know, we have a listener. We may have more than one listener, but we know of one listener that lives in Kenya. And he happens to be a pilot for a major airline. But, you know, we've talked about the coronavirus and plagues, and we've talked about at different times earthquakes and stuff. Well, in Kenya, something that's gone rather underreported is there is a terrible plague of locusts right now. And they're using all sorts of aircraft to try to spray it and get rid of them because it's been miserable. They're afraid it's going to spread through Uganda and South Sudan, and it's just been terrible. And I just wanted to give a shout out to our friend Bhavesh, and hope that he and his family are doing okay under this plague. I mean, you just don't hear about such things anymore, a plague of locusts, but it's actually happening right now in Kenya.
David, I don't know if you saw this, but I just noticed this today, back to the coronavirus, but and this is probably something for the UAV Digest, but they've repurposed some drones to spray. I don't know what they're spraying, but they're spraying something that they're hoping will knock down the coronavirus, and they're doing that with quadcopters, it looks like, from the story. Although, you know, it's hard to tell because, you know, a lot of these articles will use stock image regardless of whether or not it corresponds to what's actually being used.
Well, I mean, but We've talked about agricultural spraying on the show a lot, so it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, one of the things about a quadcopter is the downward wash of the rotor blades cause a bigger dispersal. So I'm sure that China is throwing everything against the wall to see if it sticks, to see if what they can do to get this under control. I mean, it clearly is a serious issue. And they've got a lot of quadcopters over there. We know. So it wouldn't be surprising if they're trying to get that to disseminate a vaccine or just basically a disinfectant to try to keep the virus from spreading.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing they did, I remember we talked about a story once where they had a drone, the law enforcement, the authorities used a drone with a loudspeaker to...
Oh, the crosswalk story.
Ah, yes, right. Well, they've been using that now to buzz down over individuals who are not wearing masks and informing them that they need to put a mask on. There was a story on the news I saw where some lady who really, an elderly lady who really didn't understand or looked like she understood what the heck was going on, but this drone came down, hovered over her, and told her that she needed to be wearing a mask and that she should go home and either put on a mask or go home and stay there. So they're doing that as well. All right. One listener mail. This was from Ken, who's a 737 captain. A3 engine shutdown incidents linked to cockpit drink spills. This was in Flight Global. And there are a couple of examples of this noted in the article. A Delta Airlines A350-900 was en route to Seoul, Korea, in January on the 21st. And it had to divert to Fairbanks when its one of its Rolls-Royce Trent XWB engines shut down. And then there was a similar event that occurred with another carrier, an unnamed carrier, in November last year, although it's speculated to be Asiana. But Airbus and Rolls-Royce are investigating what they call uncommanded in-flight engine shutdowns, because it seems that pilots are spilling drinks on the cockpit center console there.
Do either of you guys remember the 1964 film called Fate is the Hunter? Glenn Ford is in it, Nancy Kwan, Suzanne Plachet, Rod Taylor. It's available, actually, the full-length film is available for free on YouTube. But that's the whole plot of the film, is a cup of coffee spilling on the aircraft that brought it down and killed everyone. Everybody except the flight attendant on that particular flight. Wow. It wasn't a great film, but it was a good film to watch. And for free on YouTube, what the heck? Turn it on, give it a view.
Well, in this case, they've been looking at flight recorder analysis, and they've been seeing that the electronic engine control had commanded closure of a high pressure shutoff valve. And it did that after it got some inconsistent input from the integrated control panel. That integrated control panel is, I guess, what's in the cockpit between the two pilots in this case. And if you spill your coffee in there, I guess it doesn't quite know what to do, and so it shuts the engine down. So they're taking a look at this.
There's been some discussion about this in one of my groups of people, and apparently, while there are cup holders on the A350, they are not large enough for American-sized cups of coffee, because we drink really large cups of coffee.
So we need bigger cup holders, I guess, and you won't have engine shutdowns. Just amazing. It's crazy sometimes how the root cause of a problem can be a complete surprise and seemingly unrelated to, you know, to the effect it caused. And so I guess in this case, it's, you know, why were engines shutting down on Airbus aircraft? Because American cups are bigger. Crazy. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of the Airplane Geeks podcast. We want to thank you for listening. As always, you can find us at airplanegeeks.com. There you'll find show notes and how to find us on social media. You can learn more about us. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, there's even a donut button. There's even a donate button where you can help pay for all of this.
Oh, when did we get a donut button? I want a donut button. Send me donuts.
Yeah, I love donuts too. I've
Hot glazed.
The direct link to the show notes for this episode is airplanegeeks.com/589. And of course, you can reach us via email at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. All right, well, David Vanderhoof, where do folks find you?
They can find me on Twitter at DM Vanderhoof. They can find me on Facebook at DM Vanderhoof, on LinkedIn at David Vanderhoof. And, of course, you can find me on our Slack listener team, which Micah will tell you more about in a few minutes. And last but not least, you can find me on the UAV Digest talking about flu-preventing drones. On Fridays with that guy, Max Flight.
All right. And Micah, how about you?
Well, as David said, you can find me in the Slack listener team, and that's a great place to join. And if you're interested in joining the Slack listener team, all you got to do is send us an email at where?
thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com.
Micah@theairplanegeeks.com.
No. If you want to get me, you can reach me at Micah, that's MICAH@airplanegeeks.com. But if you want to join the listener team, don't ask. I'll delete the message, I promise. You can also follow me on Twitter. And on Twitter, my ID is Maine, like the state, M-A-I-N-E, fly, Maine fly. And you can find me there.
Great. And I'm on Twitter at MaxFlight. I'm also on LinkedIn, as David said, at the UAVDigest.com and also at PaxXPodcast.com with Mary Kirby. So please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
So great to be here with you. Have a good night.
And thanks for listening.